Now, the second and final part of our P.G. Woodhouse classic serial. Debonair Uncle Fred is visiting Blanding's Castle in the guise of a brain specialist, along with fellow impostors Pongo Twistleton and Polly Pott. Lady Constance has called in a detective to watch over the miscreants. Lord Emsworth hasn't a clue what's going on, and the Duke of Dunstable is about to receive a shock from nephew Ricky.
Uncle Fred in the Springtime by P.G. Woodhouse, starring Alfred Molina, Patricia Hodge, Rufus Sewell, Christopher Neame, Julian Holloway, Simon Templeman, Lloyd Owen, Matthew Wolfe, Sophie Winkleman, Martin Jarvis, and Jared Harris. Ian Ogilvie is the voice of P.G. Woodhouse.
Oh, by the way, Uncle Alaric, there's just one small point. Would you rather give me your cheque before I pinch the pig, or after?
What?
The Duke of Dunstable shot back in his chair, and his moustache, foaming upwards as if a gale had struck it, broke like a wave on the stern and rock-bound coast of the Dunstable nose. A lesser moustache would have worked loose at the roots. The Duke's recent high opinion of his nephew had undergone a sharp revision. Only a nephew of very exceptional charm could have retained his esteem after asking £250 for kidnapping Emsworth's pig.
What do you mean, give you my cheque?
For £250.
What the devil are you talking about, you potty, Ricky?
Uncle, I'm taking it for granted that you'll now let me have the money to buy that onion soup bar. You remember, we discussed in London. The man has since come down to £250, provided the cash is in his hands by the end of the week. Could write out a cheque now.
What? What on earth do you want with an onion soup bar?
I want to get married.
What do you mean, married? You've got about tuppence a year.
That's why I want to buy this onion soup bar.
A nice fool you'd look selling onion soup. It's been bad enough having to tell my friends you write poetry. Now you want me to spread it about you become a blasted soup dispenser? Bah!
Uncle.
And who is this girl?
Nobody you know.
Well, who's her father?
Oh, nobody special.
Well, that settles it. Not a penny do you get from me.
All right, and not a pig do you get from me.
What?
But my price for stealing pigs is £250 per pig per person, and if you don't wish to meet my terms, the deal is off.
Stop talking like a damn fool.
Uncle Alaric, your white hairs protect you, and I would just like to say this. You are without exception the worst tick and bounder that ever got fatty degeneration of the heart through half a century of gorging food and swilling wine wrenched from the lips of a starving proletariat. You make me sick. You poison the air. Goodbye, Uncle Alaric. I think we'd better terminate this interview or I may become brusque. Good afternoon.
Baxter, come over here.
Your Grace? Yes, Your Grace?
Ever done any pig stealing?
I have not.
Well, you start today.
Claude Pott, private detective, was a realist. Where others, getting their initial glimpse of Blanding's Castle, usually admired the rolling parkland and the noble trees, he merely felt that the owner of a place like this must unquestionably have what it takes to play Persian monarchs. Little wonder that life looked rosy to Claude Pott when the cab drew up at the front door and he was conducted by Beach the butler to the smoking room, where he found a substantial pink personage warming a solid trouser seat in front of a cheerful fire.
Mr. Claude Pott, my lord.
Hello, Pott. So, here you are, Pott. What? Splendid. Capital. Thank you, Beach.
My lord.
Come in, take a seat, my dear old clue collector.
Oh, thank you.
My name's Bossum. I'm by way of being Lord Emsworth's son.
Well, charmed, I'm sure.
Let's get down to it, shall we?
Yes, I should be glad to have a brief outline of the position of affairs.
Brief? Well, I'll cut it as short as I can. Do you know what impostors are?
Yes, sir.
Well, we've got them in the house. Three of them. All imposting away like the dickens. I don't wonder my Aunt Constance is upset.
It's not nice for a woman feeling that every time she goes to her room to fetch a handkerchief or whatnot, she may find the place littered with bounders rifling her jewel case.
Are these imposters M?
M?
Male.
Two of them are. The third in sharp contradistinction is female.
F.
Ah. And speaking of her brings us to the Baxter theory.
Is Baxter an imposter?
No. He's the Duke of Dunstable's secretary. A gosh-awful tick with steel-rimmed spectacles. His theory is that these blighters are here to lure the Duke into allowing his nephew, Ricky Gilpin, to marry the girl. In my opinion, there is nothing to that. They are after the swag.
But if you know that these individuals are here with criminal intent...
Why don't we lead them off with gyves upon their wrists? Ha! My dear old cigar-ash inspectors, what I'd give my eye teeth to do, but it can't be done. It would lead to consequences, which we don't want led to. And when I say we, I speak principally for my Aunt Connie. Personally, I don't care if Baxter loses his job tomorrow.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't follow you, Lord B.
I thought you wouldn't. Still, you've grasped the salient fact that the place is crawling with imposters?
I have.
Well, your job is to keep an eye on them. And if you see them dipping into the till, you shout hoy and they cheese it. That's simple enough? Capital. And you can start in at once. Oh, and by the way, you'd like something in the nature of a retaining fee, what?
I would.
Good. Here you are.
Oh, thank you. You've got a lot of money there, Lord B.
And I may need it before tomorrow's sun has set. It's the first day of the Bridgeford races where I usually get skinned to the bone. You interested in racing?
Oh, I was at one time a turf commissioner.
Wait, really? I expect you miss it, don't you?
I do at times, Lord B.
What do you do for amusement these days?
I like a quiet little game of cards.
So do I. I say. The trouble is, when I'm at home in Hampshire, I don't get the chance. My wife objects.
Some wives are like that.
Look here. While we're waiting for these imposters to get up steam, we could do far worse than have a friendly little game now.
As your lordship pleases.
I wish you wouldn't use that expression. It's what counsel for the defence kept saying to the judge at my breach of promise case. Don't do it if you don't mind.
Very good, your lordship.
And don't call me your lordship either. Call me Bosom.
Oh, righto, Bosom.
Yes. I'll ring for some cards, shall I?
Don't bother, Bosom. I have some with me. I like to play solitaire in the train.
Good Lord. You play anything else?
I'm fond of Snap.
Oh, yes. Snap's a good game.
And Animal Grab.
Well, that's not bad either. But I can tell you something that's better than both. Have you ever heard of a game called Persian Monarchs?
No. What is it?
It's a thing I used to play a good deal at one time, though in recent years I've dropped it a bit. As I sir say, a married man of the right sir sort defers to his wife's wishes, if she's around. But now I'm here in Shropshire and she isn't. It'd be interesting to see if the old skill still lingers.
It's a pretty name. Is it difficult to learn?
I could teach it to you in a minute. Here's the way it goes. You cut a card, if you see what I mean, and the other fellow cuts a card, if you follow me. And then, if the card you've cut is higher than the card the other fellow has cut, you win. While conversely, if the card the other fellow's cut is higher than the card you've cut, he wins. Not too abstruse for you?
I think I see the idea.
I'm sure you'll pick it up as we go along. Start ho, Pot.
Start ho, Bosom.
Oh, hello.
What? Oh, yes, you're that niece.
Yes, of Sir Roderick Glossop. I am Gwendolyn.
That's right. Damned attractive name.
Oh, thank you.
Damned attractive young woman, too.
Oh.
Steaming hot cup, in fact. You remind me of,
Yes?
Never mind. Oxford. Long ago.
Well, thanks.
Married?
Engaged.
Oh, lucky fella. What you wasting your time at Blandings for?
Oh, to be of assistance to my uncle.
You'll need it. They're all potty here. Good day to you. I have a nephew who, Good day.
Good day.
I say, Mustard Pot.
Coo-hoo, Lord Eye.
What on earth are you doing in the middle of Shropshire, Mustard?
Well, it's a secret, Lord Eye, but I know you won't let it go any further. I was sent for.
Sent for? By Polly?
Polly? She's not here.
Yes, she is. Who sent for you?
Lord Bosom. Seems there's imposters in the place, and he wants an eye kept on them.
Does he, by Jove?
Yes. I'm to keep my eyes skinned to see that they don't walk off with the objet d'art.
I see. What did he tell you about these imposters?
That there were three of them. Two M, one F.
Ah. The imposters to whom Bosom refers are, reading from right to left, your daughter Polly, my nephew Pongo, and myself.
You're pulling my leg, Lord I.
No. Perhaps I'd better explain.
But then Lord Ickenham paused for a moment. He just remembered that Mr. Pott did not approve of his daughter's desire to marry Ricky Gilpin. He also recalled that it was her father's hope that Polly would succumb to the charms of Horace Davenport. It seemed to him, therefore, that if Mr. Pott's cooperation was to be secured, it would be necessary to deviate slightly from the actual facts.
Polly is in love with Horace Davenport.
Eh? Oh, I've dropped a tenner.
Oh, here you are. Somebody been leaving you a fortune, Mustard?
Tantamount to that, Lord I. Young Bosom, and a nice young fellow he is, was teaching me to play Persian monarchs.
Hmm. How much did you get away with?
250, I make it.
That'll make a nice little dowry for Polly. Help her to, buy her trousseau.
Eh?
I'll come back to that later. For the moment, I will be putting you au courant with the position at Blandings Castle. The key to the whole business is that Polly is in love with Horace Davenport.
But I thought she was in love with young Gilpin.
A mere passing flirtation. No, Horace Davenport is the man. And he loves her just as she loves him. He came down here the day after that dance, and we came the day after following him.
Why?
It's quite simple. You know who Horace is, Mustard. The nephew and heir of the Duke of Dunstable.
Ooh, I like a duke.
And we have come here in the humble capacity of impostors. I'm here in the guise of Sir Roderick Glossop, nerve doctor. Because it is essential, if there is to be a happy ending, that Polly shall fascinate the duke and set him thinking that she is the ideal girl to marry his nephew and heir. This duke is tough, Mustard. He nails his collar to the back of his neck to save buying studs.
Ouch!
And you must keep yourself in the background, Mustard. Polly is supposed to be my daughter.
Eh? Why couldn't she have come here as my daughter?
Well, it just happened to work out the other way. Now, this money you've taken off Bosom, I want you to give it to me, my dear old friend.
What?
And I will hand it over to Polly as her wedding portion.
Oh, Lord, aye.
I know. It will be agony.
Yes, but I don't approve of a young girl having a lot of money. I wouldn't mind giving her a tenner, but 250...
A trifle compared with your peace of mind. If you fail her now, you will never have another happy moment.
How about a nice 20?
All or nothing, Mustard. Oh, dash it, it's not as if the money would be lost. You could always take it off Horace at Persian Monarchs after the honeymoon.
Cool, that's right, isn't it? Of course I can. Here you are, Lord I, 250.
Thank you, Mustard. I shall pass it on to Pongo, who's temporarily my son, Basil Glossop, by the way, to hand on to Polly. You'll never regret this, my dear fellow.
Mr. Pott?
Eh? Oh, it's you, young Gilpin. What are you doing here?
My Uncle Alaric sent for me. He's staying at Blandings Castle. He wanted to see me on a business matter, but it fell through. I'm leaving for London this evening. You're here for the Bridgeford races, of course.
Yes, that's right.
Have some of this beer, it's good.
No, thank you.
It occurs to me, Mr. Pott, there's something I'd like a word with you about. Are you fond of onion soup?
No.
Well, lots of people are. And in this connection, I want to put a business proposition up to you.
Eh?
I don't know if Polly's happened to mention to you, Mr. Pott, that I have the opportunity of buying one of these onion soup bars. You've probably noticed them around Piccadilly Circus way.
Oh, I seem to remember her talking about it.
Enthusiastically, I expect. They coin money. Gold mines, every one of them. The one I'm speaking of belongs to an American friend of mine. He's offered to let me have it for £250.
£250? Ow! That's a lot of money.
A lot of money? For a going concern, right in the heart of London's onion soup drinking belt? He's simply giving it away. He says I can have it for 250, provided I give him the money by the end of the week. And let me tell you, Mr. Pott, the potentialities are stupendous. I've watched the bottle party addicts rolling up with their tongues out. It's like a herd of buffaloes stampeding for a waterhole.
Then you'd better give him his 250.
I would, if I had it. Can you lend me the money?
No.
You can have any interest you like.
No, sir. Include me out.
You can't say you haven't got it.
I have got it, and more.
Then why?
I'll tell you why. Because if I give it you, you'll go and talk my dear daughter into marrying you. Polly's easily led. anything to make people happy. And then the bitter awakening, because after all, young G, what are you? Just a poet. Polly can do better.
I'm sorry you dislike
me. No, it's not disliking. It's disapproving of. My dear daughter ought to marry a man of substance. This Horace Davenport now.
Horace?
Yeah, it's all very well to say Horace in that tone of voice. Now, look here. You. Oi, you.
What? Oh, good heavens. Good afternoon. Mr. Davenport, is it not? Delighted to see you. But what are we doing here? I thought we had decided to go and take a rest cure at Bournemouth.
Cut that wee stuff out. Not in the mood.
Oh. This is not the delightfully receptive Horace Davenport of our previous meeting when you confided in me about those hallucinations of yours.
I tell you, cheese it.
I beg your pardon?
My gosh, you jolly well ought to. It may interest you to learn that I know all.
Indeed?
Yes. You are not Sir Roderick Glossop. You're Valerie's Uncle Fred. I met someone in London who knows Glossop, and I've had him described to me in pitiless detail.
My dear fellow, you are perfectly right. I am Valerie's Uncle Fred.
And I wasn't suffering from any hallucinations. It was Pongo Twizzleton and Polly Pot that I met in the hall that time. A nice thing you three blisters did to me, making me think I was off my rocker.
No doubt you are feeling much relieved.
What I am feeling, if you must know, is pretty dashed shirty.
I can only say that I am sorry, but it was military necessity. Let me explain why we're all visiting Blanding's castle incognito like this. We are hoping that Polly may succeed in winning the Duke's heart without his knowing who she is, thus paving the way for her marriage to your cousin Ricky. We could not trust your open, honest nature not to give the show away.
But I thought Ricky and Polly had split up.
Far from it. It is true there was a temporary rift, but Ricky is once more 100% the devout lover.
Then why does he want to murder me?
He doesn't.
He does, I tell you. He's got the idea that I'm a kind of... Who was that chap with such a devil with the other sex? Donald something.
Donald Duck.
Juan. Donald Juan. Don Juan, that's the fellow I mean. Unless I can convince Ricky that I am not a Don Juan and not up to any funny business with Polly, the worst will happen.
I appear not to be abreast of the stop press situation. You had better tell me your story.
This Horace Davenport, he's the nephew of a duke.
Well, if we're being snobs, so am I the nephew of a duke. The same Duke Dunstable, as a matter of fact.
Aha, but your ma hadn't the stuff, and Horace's pa had.
Mr. Pot, let me put it this way. If ever there was a pot-bellied little human louse who needed to have the stuffing kicked out of him and his remains jumped on by strong men in hobnailed boots, it is you, Mr. Pot. If ever I see a mob in the street setting on you, I shall offer to hold their coats and stand by and cheer.
All right, young G. There is such a thing as going too far, and you have gone it. No wonder Polly is now seeing Horace Davenport. I will take my refreshment elsewhere.
What? Seeing Davenport? Nonsense. I don't believe a word of it.
I will wish you a very good afternoon, and there's an end to it.
All right. You want the thing in a nutshell, then? Valerie is in full possession of the facts concerning your goings-on, and she's coming here tomorrow at the latest.
Valerie, coming here?
I thought that would touch you up.
Not at all. I'm always glad to see my dear niece, always. You have run into her again, then?
I met her at a restaurant in London last night, by chance. Well, I was telling Valerie how miserable I've been since she handed me the mitten. I saw her eyes soften and a tear stole into it. The next moment, we were locked in a close embrace.
And then?
Then it turned out that a friend of hers knew Sir Roderick Glossop. Her description made it clear that you couldn't be him, so it seemed pretty obvious that he must be you.
Remorseless reasoning.
The outcome was that Valerie's intention is to breeze down here and expose you to one and all. And I saw what I had to do was make an early start and get here before she did. Because, you see, though all is forgiven, she still seems a bit curious about Polly.
You mean about your relations with her?
Yes. So as soon as I could manage it, I drove here to tell Polly to clear out while there was yet time.
Very shrewd.
I phoned her from the Emsworth Arms, arranging a meeting at the castle gate. I then drove there.
And?
I found Ricky on the back of my car, frothing at the mouth.
On the back of your car?
Yes. He stowed away. As I climbed down from the front, he climbed down from the back and made a dive at me.
It must have given you a start.
It did. He wouldn't let me back in. I had to leave him standing guard over my car, and I walked up to the front door. And having missed Polly, the best I could do was sneak up here.
Right. Polly shall be removed from Blanding's before Valerie arrives. Indeed, I rather think that none of us will be here to welcome the dear girl. If Valerie were in a position to report to GHQ, viz. My wife Jane, that she had found me at Blanding's castle posing as a brain specialist, the consequences might stagger humanity. So rest assured, my boy, that I will lose no time in collecting my young associates, and you shall drive us back to London.
But how can I get at the car?
I think I shall be able to adjust your little problem with Ricky satisfactorily. I would suggest that you remain here till my return. If you prefer to hide in the cupboard, in case your uncle the Duke happens to look in, by all means do so. Make yourself at home. Polly?
Oh, hello.
Hey.
Oh, Uncle Fred.
Don't tell me. You went to meet Horace at the gate and found Ricky.
Mm.
And from your manner, I gather that the plug ugly, rather than the poet, was uppermost in him.
Oh, he was awful. Not that you can blame him. After all, I had promised I would never see Horace again, and there I was, sneaking off to him.
Oh, don't be so infernally broad-minded, child. So what happened?
He raved and yelled at me. He said everything was over. Then I lost my temper and started being as beastly as he was.
Do you hate him?
Of course I don't.
You mean in spite of everything you love him still?
Of course I do.
Women are amazing. Well, I'll soon fix things. I'm on my way down to the gates to interview him now. Wait there. Watch this space. Mr. Gilpin, I presume?
Who are you?
My name is Ickenham.
Oh.
No doubt Polly has spoken of me.
Yes.
Then, in reciprocal spirit, I will now speak of Polly.
You're wasting your time. I know Polly has sent you to try to talk me round.
My dear fellow, you little know that proud girl.
What? Bally Rich. A girl who's supposed to love you, hobnobbing with Horace Davenport after she'd promised...
My dear boy, it was precisely because she loved you that she did hobnob with Horace. Let me explain. Polly went to that ball to catch Horace in mellow mood and plead with him to advance you the sum which you require for that onion soup bar of yours.
What?
For weeks, she had been sedulously sweetening him by giving him dancing lessons, and that night was to have marked the culmination of the enterprise. But your headstrong conduct ruined her plans, so she had to wait for another opportunity. Learning that Horace was expected here, she came too. She met him, she got the money.
She... What?
Certainly. It's in her possession now. She was bringing it to you.
But how did she know I was here?
What does it matter how she knew? Suffice it that she did know, and she came running to you with the money in her hand like a child about to show some cherished treasure. And you, what did you do? You behaved like a cad and a scoundrel. I'm not surprised that she feels she has had a lucky escape.
Oh, my gosh, does she?
That is what she was saying when I saw her just now, and I don't blame her. There can be no love without trust. And a pretty exhibition of trustfulness you gave, did you not?
Oh, Lord, I've mucked things up properly.
I'm glad you realise it.
Where is Polly? I must see her.
I wouldn't advise it. She's furious with you at the moment. There is only one thing you can do. When are you returning to London?
I had meant to catch the early evening train.
Do so. Polly will be back at her home shortly. As soon as she arrives, go and buy her chocolates and send them round with a grovelling note.
I will.
You might then plead for an interview. And when I say plead... I mean, plead.
Of course.
She was fond of you once, and it may be that she will grow fond of you again. I will talk to her and do what I can for you.
It's awfully kind of you.
Not at all. Good evening, Gilpin, my boy. And remember, chocolates. Humble, remorseful chocolates. And plenty of them.
But why wouldn't you let Ricky see me, Uncle Fred?
My dear child, the only way of ensuring a happy married life is to get it thoroughly clear at the outset who is going to skipper the team. My own dear wife settled the point during the honeymoon, and ours has been an ideal union.
It's all nonsense. I'm going to see him. I don't care if he does go on thinking he's the boss. So he is, and I like it.
Oh, very well, if that's the sort of thing you want. But you can't see him now. He has gone to catch his train. Why not get Horace to drive you to London tonight?
Would he, do you think? He's had one long drive already today.
It is his dearest wish to have another, provided you are at his side. Pongo and I can come on in the morning by train.
But are you leaving too?
We are. Get Horace to tell you all about it. You will find him in my bedroom. If you don't see him, look in the cupboard.
Cupboard.
I, meanwhile, must be getting in touch with Pongo. The news that we are flitting should please him. For some reason, Pongo has not been happy at Blandings Castle. By the way, did you meet him?
Yes, as I was coming back after seeing Ricky.
Good. I was only wondering if you had got that money all right.
Pongo did offer me some money, but I gave it back to him.
Gave it back?
Yes. I didn't want it.
What? But, my good child, it was the purchase price of the onion soup bar.
your wedding portion.
I know, he told me. But I'd just had that frightful row with Ricky and we'd parted forever and I was thinking of drowning myself, so I didn't want a wedding portion. Will you tell Pongo I should like it after all?
You would not speak in that airy, casual way if you knew the circumstances. There will be a nasty hacking sound as he coughs up. Still, you may rely on me to protect your interests. I will bring the stuff round to the pot home tomorrow afternoon. And now run along and find Horace. I know he would appreciate an early start.
All right. Uncle Fred, you're an angel.
Mwah. Thanks.
Bye.
Well, think nothing of it.
Pongo, my boy.
Hello, Uncle Fred. I say, what a lovely afternoon.
Very.
The air, the birdery, the scent of growing things.
Quite. Pongo, about that money.
What? The money you gave me to give to Miss Pott. Oh, yes, I was going to tell you about that. I offered it to her, but she said that having parted with Ricky, she had no need of it. So I trousered it and toddled on to Market Blandings and breezed into the post office and shoved 250 quid into an envelope addressed to George Budd, bookmaker, and sent it off, registered. So all is now well, debt paid. Oh, the relief is stupendous.
Pongo, this is a little awkward.
How do you mean? It seems to me... Oh, my aunt, don't tell me Polly's changed her mind and wants the stuff after all.
I fear so.
You mean she's made it up with Ricky?
Yes.
And needs that money to get married on?
Exactly. I told Ricky the money was actually in her possession and he went off to catch his train with golden visions of soup-swilling multitudes dancing before his eyes. I told Polly I would bring her the stuff tomorrow and she went off singing. She's not going to be pleasant to have to reveal the facts.
What's to be done?
I have it. Mustard.
Eh?
Mustard pot. We must unleash mustard once more.
At Bosom?
Not at Bosom. People who play Persian monarchs with mustard in the afternoon are seldom in a frame of mind to play again in the evening. Lord Emsworth is the man.
Old Emsworth? Oh, I say, dash it.
I know what you mean. One ought to draw the line at nicking a kindly host. But in a crisis like this, one must sink one's finer feelings. I don't believe I told you, did I, that your sister Valerie is expected here shortly?
What?
Which means that we have got to get out of here by tomorrow's 8:25 train without fail. So we cannot loiter and dally if we are to secure funds for Polly. It is not a question of asking ourselves, is it right to take it off Emsworth? But rather, has he got it? And he has. Emsworth, therefore, shall give us of his plenty.
Good afternoon to you. How are you, Emperor? Had your tea? Come along. I've got something for you. Come on. Huh? What? Where are you? What? Oh. My pig. Where's my pig? Emperor? My pig! Very man. What am I to do?
Emsworth, what's happened?
Higginham.
Emsworth, it's clear from your manner you're in the grip of some strong emotion.
Can you
spill it?
What? It's my pig.
The Empress of Blandings?
Yes, my pig.
What's happened? Sit down.
What? Oh. I'd gone down to her sty, refreshed myself with an after tea look at her.
And?
She's not there. She's gone.
Gone?
Yes. The sty was empty. Her bed had not been slept in. My pigman searching the grounds now. I know who the culprit is.
What? Who?
Alaric, Duke of Dunstable. He told me he wanted my pig.
Well, Emsworth, old chap, I doubt the Duke's the guilty party.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, he's been in his room all afternoon.
You sure?
Absolutely. He retired there after lunch and hasn't been seen again.
You don't say.
And he couldn't have gone out into the garden through his bedroom window, because I know Baxter has been sitting on the lawn from 1:30 onwards.
Baxter?
You may recall that Baxter was not with us at lunch.
Oh?
He had a slight attack of dyspepsia and decided to skip the meal.
Oh.
Well, my condolences. The thing becomes one of the great historic mysteries, ranking with the case of the Marie Celeste.
Hmm?
I do have a suggestion.
What?
Something to take your mind off the thing. Excellent method might be to play cards.
Oh.
Well, here's Mr. Mustard Pot, been sitting quietly. He'll give you a game. Mustard, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't happen to have a pack handy.
Certainly, your lordship. Persian monarchs, perhaps?
Oh. All right. I used to play a lot of it. Very well. Jack of... ten of... oh, dear. Oh, Lord. Oh, bless myself. Well, Mr. Pott, you've won every coup.
Yes, I'm so sorry, Your Lordship.
Well, thank you for a pleasant game. Yeah, fortunate we've not been playing for money, well, otherwise I might have lost a considerable sum.
Eh?
Ah.
A very good evening, too.
Oh, Lord, I.
Yes, indeed, Mustard.
This has never happened to me before. I definitely said a tenner a coup, but I guess he was thinking about his pig all the time. Oh, hello, Your Grace. Would you care for a game of Persian monarchs?
No. What's going on? Hello, Glossop.
Dunstable. Mr. Pod here was just suggesting a game of Persian monarchs. I don't play, but...
Persian monarchs? Be delighted. Had a boring afternoon. Just left my room for a few minutes. Game of Persian monarchs is just what I would enjoy.
Excellent, Your Grace. I'm obliged. Please be seated. A tenner a coup. I say a tenner a coup.
Very well. Yes, I was rather gifted at this pastime as a young man. Get on with it.
And I tell you, Pongo, Dunstable's claim to excellence at the game was proved to the hilt. Mark you, I don't think Mustard was at his best. That supreme effort with Emsworth had left him weak and listless. Dunstable took £300 off him in 10 minutes. It was Persian monarchs par excellence. I never expect to witness a finer display of pure science.
£300?
Paid right across the counter. Pod swears revenge, of course.
But if Pod had all that on him, why didn't he give it to Polly?
Not even for a daughter's sake would Mustard give up his working capital.
Oh, so now what do we do?
Well, now, of course, we nip into the Duke's room and pinch the stuff.
Pinch it? But you can't pinch money.
Well, dash bad form, of course, I know. But I shall look upon it as a loan, to be paid back at irregular intervals.
But dash it...
It's got to be done. Polly's need is paramount. I look on her more like a daughter than a whatnot. I suppose my feelings towards her are roughly those of Emsworth towards his pig. And I'm not going to allow far-fetched scruples to stand in my way. So, as I say, we'll pinch the stuff.
You aren't proposing to lug me into this.
Lug you? Lug you? What an extraordinary expression. I had naturally supposed that you would be overjoyed to do your bit. But for you, Polly would have all the money she needs.
Oh, golly.
In a sense, you are morally bound to sit in.
That's right, I suppose.
Then you will?
Of course, rather.
Good. I'm relieved. Right. Dunstable, for some reason, is keeping closely to his room. It will be your task to flit about the lawn outside Dunstable's window singing The Bonny, Bonny Banks of Loch Lomond.
Eh? Why?
I'll explain all later. I now have to make a call on Mustard. I need to obtain from him 2 knockout drops.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. You may leave this side of the thing to me with every confidence. I'm going to filch that 300 from the Duke's room, or my name isn't Roderick Glossop. Which, of course, it isn't. Your duties will not begin until after dinner. Ah, my dear Mr. Baxter.
What do you want?
I just dropped in to offer condolences. How are you?
Oh.
A touch of the collie wobbles, I understand. Oh, too bad, too bad. We all missed you at lunch, and there was a great deal of sympathy expressed. By myself, of course, no less than the others.
I can do without your sympathy.
Can any of us do without sympathy, Baxter, even from the humblest? Mine, moreover, takes a practical and constructive form.
Oh.
I have here a tablet which I guarantee will make you forget the most absorbing stomachache. You take it in a little water. I see you have a tumbler there. I place the tablet in it, so I fill with water. Thus, I stir, I mix, and there you are. Drink it down, and let's see what happens.
Obvious that you've come here in the hope of getting round me. You want something.
Merely to see you your old bonny self again.
You're trying to conciliate me, and I know why. You've begun to wonder if the hold you suppose yourself to have over me is quite as great as you imagined.
Beautifully expressed.
Oh, Let me tell you at once that you have no hold over me since our conversation in the billiard room. The whole situation has changed. I have been able to perform a great service for my employer regarding a professional matter, with the result that I am no longer in danger of being dismissed for having gone to that ball. So I may as well inform you, it is my intention to have you turned out of the house immediately.
My dear fellow, you're in pain. You had better drink that mixture.
Get out!
Very well, since you wish it. Oh, I beg your pardon.
Hello. Hello, hello, hello. Want anything?
Only dinner, Bottom.
Oh. Well, it'll be ready in a minute.
Jolly good. Toodaloo.
What was that bird after, Baxter?
I kicked him out, Lord Bossum, before he could tell me. Ostensibly, his purpose was to bring me something for my indigestion, a tablet, he put it in that glass. What he was really up to, of course, was a request that I would refrain from exposing him as an impostor.
But you can't expose him, can you? Wouldn't you lose your job?
There is no longer any danger of that. The situation has changed.
Changed? Ah. Then now I'm in a position to set about these impostors as impostors should be set about. That's really official, is it?
Quite. Oh.
Anguish?
No.
If I were you, Baxter, I'd drink the stuff the blighter gave you. The fact that a chap is an impostor doesn't necessarily mean he can't spot a good stomachache cure when he sees one.
Oh.
Down the hatch with it, my writhing old serpent, with a hey nonny nonny and a hot cha-cha.
Do! All right, I'll do it. Hand me the glass.
Here you are. Aunt Connie!
Oh, what? Bossum, I'm on my way to dinner. Are you intoxicated?
Of course I'm not. Listen, Aunt Connie. You know those impostors. Impostors A, B, and C. M's and an F. Well, things are getting hot. Imposter A has just laid Baxter out cold with a knockout drop.
What? I don't understand.
Well, I can't make it any simpler. Imposter A has just slipped Baxter a Mickey Finn. It must mean that tonight's the night, that whatever dirty work they are contemplating will be done before tomorrow's sun has risen. Now, we'll go into dinner, but mark this, Aunt Connie, and mark it well. The moment we rise from the table, I get the governor's good old gun, and I lurk. I don't know what's up, and you don't know what's up, but the something is up sticks out a mile. Come along.
At 9:20, the Duke of Dunstable, who had dined off a tray in his room, was about to savour his coffee and the generous glass of brandy liqueur that had been brought to him by Beach the butler. But he was anxious. The failure of Rupert Baxter to report for duty and drive the pig to Wiltshire was affecting him.
Baxter, where the devil...
It's only me, Your Grace. Glossop, the brain chap. Good evening. I wonder if you could spare me a moment.
What?
It's about that money you won from that man. Pot is his name, I believe.
What about it?
I've been talking to him. He is most distressed. I beg your pardon? Yes, most distressed. It seems that, in a sense, the money was not his to gamble with.
What do you mean? Robbed a till or something, did he?
No. It was a sum which he had been saving up for his daughter's wedding portion. And now it's gone.
What do you expect me to do about it?
You wouldn't... feel inclined to give it back?
Take back? Never heard of such a thing.
Well, it would be a pity if his daughter were not able to get married.
Why?
She's engaged to a fine young poet.
Poet? Don't talk to me about poets, scum of the earth.
So you won't give the money back?
No. And you'll have to go now. I'm expecting my secretary at any moment for an important conference. You haven't seen him anywhere, have you?
I had a few words with him before dinner, but I've not seen him since. Ah, there he is, no doubt.
Eh?
Someone knocked, I think.
What? I didn't hear anything. Baxter, is that you?
There we are. Jolly Mickey Finn. Jolly good.
Nobody there.
Ah, then I was mistaken. Well, I will be leaving you. Good night, my dear fellow. Tinkety. Tonk.
Where the devil is he?
Hello, Your Grace. I was just coming along to your suite.
Eh? What do you mean? Well, seeing as how you like a nice card game, I wondered if you'd enjoy a game of Slippery Joe. It's,
Go to hell! I'm looking for my secretary.
Oh. Well, if he's left the door open, £300 morally belonging to myself, so... Damn. Oh, no, wait a minute. Try the French windows. Let's see. Oh, too late anyway. There he is, back in his room. Ooh, close shave. Never mind.
By yon bonny banks and by yon bonny braes, where the sun shines bright on Loch Lomond.
What?
Then
what's that?
Spent many happy
hey!
Days on the
hey, is that you, Baxter? Is that your signal? Where are you, dash it? Hey, dash it, Baxter. Where the devil are you? Baxter? Baxter, I say. Baxter!
Well, thank you, Your Grace. In you go, Pot. Now, where's my 300? Eh? Ooh, someone coming. Embarrassing. Right, dive for the bathroom.
Ah, and well sung, Pongo. What artistry. Never seen a duke move quicker. Now, where's that wedding portion? What?
Ah!
What?
Oh,
I say, mustard.
Oh, Your Lordship, I give me that brandy.
No, my mustard, stop. No, not that. Mm. Oh, too late. Oh, mustard. Oh, tut-tut. Well.
Hello.
Ha! The bosom old thing, I say.
What's going on? Well, I'm dashed. Here's a nice state of things. By the way, Imposter, this is my father's shotgun. I see so. You've put it across poor old Pot now, have you? That's a bit thick. We engage detectives at enormous expense, and as fast as we can get them in, you bowl them over with knockout drops.
Ah, well.
You jolly well get in there. Into that cupboard with you. Quick, and no back chat.
Of course. Certainly, old chap. By all means. Here we are.
Can I be of assistance, my lord?
Ah, Beach, yes.
Is that a corpse, my lord?
No, probably not. Beach.
My lord?
Get a flock of footmen and have Mr. Pot taken up to his room, will you?
Very good, my lord.
Well, that's put a stopper on Imposter A, but what about Imposter B? Yoicks! The bathroom! All right. Come out at once. You hear? I have a shotgun. Oh, my golly. The governor's pig. Hello. No, get away. Careful. No, just an accident. Sorry.
Sir? What's going on? Indoor artillery practice? What?
Bosom, what's been happening?
The governor's pig.
What? My pig! Connie, my pig! What? My pig! What? No! Wait! No! Wait, my beauty! Empress! Wait for me!
Clarence! Clarence! Oh, what? Bosom? Is that a corpse?
Quite all right, Aunt Connie. Just an accident.
Accident?
I mean the gun going off. Sorry you were troubled. No, not a corpse. Just, a comatose.
What?
Insensate, don't you know?
What has been happening?
Yes, I thought you'd want to know that. Well, it was like this.
Oh, be quiet, Bosom.
All quite simple and in order.
I thought the Duke had been murdered.
No such luck. By the way, I wonder where he's got to. Ah, here's Beach. He'll tell us. Do you know where the Duke is, Beach?
No, my lord. Pardon me, my lord. My lady, John and Henry are here to carry out the removal of the gentleman.
Oh, yes. Proceed, by all means.
Thank you, my lord. Ready, John?
Yes.
Your end. Oh, down a bit. Easy.
Pardon me, m'lady.
Yes, Beach.
A Miss Twistleton has arrived, m'lady.
Miss Twistleton?
Twistleton? That's the girl who gave Horace the raspberry.
What can she be doing here at this hour?
That we can ascertain by seeing the wench. Where did you park her, Beach?
I showed the lady into the drawing room, my lord.
Then ho for the drawing room. Oh, Beach, can you use a gun?
As a young lad, I was somewhat expert with an air gun, my lord.
Well, take this. It isn't an air gun, but the principle's the same. You put it to the shoulder and so, and pull the trigger thus. Sorry. I forgot that would happen. It was silly of me. Now I'll have to reload. There's a miscreant in that cupboard, Beach, who wants watching like a hawk. And I shall require you to stay here and see that he doesn't get out. Here's the gun. Lord. At the first sign of any funny business on his part, such as trying to break down the door, whip the weapon to the shoulder and blaze away like billier. You follow me, Beach?
Yes, my lord.
Then pick up the feet, Aunt Johnny, and let's go.
That we parted in yon bonny glen, on the steep, steep side of Ben Lomond, where in purple hue the highland hills we view, and the moon glints out in the gloaming.
What the devil's this? A butler toting a gun? What do you mean, you fella? Invading my private apartment with a dashed cannon?
Your Grace...
Don't bite that thing at me, sir. Put it down and explain.
I must apologise for my presence, Your Grace, but I was instructed by Lord Bosom to remain here and act as his deputy during his temporary absence. I'm informed by his lordship that he has deposited a miscreant in the cupboard.
A what?
Something I gather in the nature of a nocturnal marauder, Your Grace. His lordship gave me to understand that he discovered the man in this room and, having overpowered him, locked him in the cupboard.
Which cupboard?
I believe this is the safe deposit in question, Your Grace.
My God! All in among my spring suit. Let him out at once. I'm not going to have smelly miscreants ruining my clothes. Let him out immediately.
Very good, Your Grace.
I'll throw the door open and you stand ready with your gun. Now then, when I say three. One, two... Three.
Ha-ha! Good evening.
Good Lord, it's the Bane chap.
Ah, my dear Duke, good evening once more. I wonder if I might use your hairbrush. The thatch has become a little disordered. Thank you.
What on earth were you doing going into cupboards?
I went in because I was requested to by the man behind the gun. I don't know how you feel about these things, my dear fellow, but my view is that when an impetuous young gentleman fingering the trigger of a gun tells you to go into a cupboard, it is best to humour him.
But why did he tell you to go into the cupboard?
Ah, there you take me into deep waters. He gave me no opportunity of inquiring.
I mean, you're not a nocturnal marauder.
No, I just called in for a chat with you.
I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Hey, you, go and fetch Lord Bosom.
Very good, Your Grace.
The fact of the matter is, the whole family's potty. As I told you before, I just met Emsworth in the garden. His manner was most peculiar. He called me a pig-stealing pest and a number of other things. I made allowances, of course, for the fact that he's as mad as a hatter, but I shall leave tomorrow and I shan't come here again. They'll miss me. Can't help that. Did Bosom shoot at you?
No.
He shot at someone?
Yes, I heard a fusillade going on.
The fellow oughtn't to be at large. Human life isn't safe. Ah, there he is.
Thank you, Beach.
My lord.
Hey, you, Bosom. What the devil do you mean?
Yes, I should be rather intrigued to make his acquaintance. Well, hello, all.
What, Valerie? Where did you spring from?
This Alaric is Miss Twistleton.
Of course she's Miss Twistleton, I know that.
Ah, she is Miss Twistleton, is she? You identify her.
Of course I identify her. It's Valerie.
My mistake. I thought she might be Imposter D.
Bosom, you're an idiot.
Righto, Aunt Connie.
Bosom, you're a damn fool.
Righto, Duke.
Chump.
Righto, Miss Twistleton. It was just that it occurred to me that Miss Twistleton, though she said she was Miss Twistleton, might not be Miss Twistleton, but simply pretending to be Miss Twistleton in order to extricate Imposter A from a nasty spot. But of course, if you're all solid on the fact of Miss Twistleton really being Miss Twistleton, my theory falls to the ground. Sorry, Miss Twistleton.
Bosom, will you please stop drivelling?
Righto, Aunt Connie.
And now perhaps you'll explain, young cloth-headed Bosom, what you mean by shutting your father's guests in cupboards. Do you realise that the man might have messed up my spring suits and died of suffocation?
We came to let Lord Ickenham out.
Let who out?
Lord Ickenham.
How do you mean, Lord Ickenham?
I now know this to be Lord Ickenham.
Yes, I am Lord Ickenham, and this is my favourite niece.
I'm your only niece.
Perhaps that's the reason.
What? I don't understand all this. If you're Ickenham, why didn't you say you were Ickenham? Why didn't you tell us you were Glossop?
Precisely. I'm waiting for Lord Ickenham to explain his extraordinary behaviour.
Me too. And he played a confidence trick on me in London.
My dear fellow, merely an experiment in the interests of science. I sent your wallet to your home, by the way. You will find it waiting there for you.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I value that warrant.
Right. I will now ask Lord Ickenham to explain why he came to Blandings Castle pretending to be Sir Roderick Glossop.
It's a long story.
We have the night before us, Uncle.
And why did he lay out Baxter and our detective with knockout drops?
Please, Bosom.
Yes, as I say, it's a long story, but if you're sure it won't bore you...
No, not at all. We shall all be most interested. So will Aunt Jane when I tell her.
My dear child, you mustn't breathe a word to your aunt about meeting me here.
Oh, no.
Emphatically not. Lady Constance will agree with me, I know, when she has heard what I have to say. The explanation of the whole thing is absurdly simple. I came here on Emsworth's behalf.
I do not understand you.
I will make myself plain. Emsworth came and told me a strange and romantic story.
And now you're telling us one.
My dear.
Thank you. It seemed that he had become sentimentally attached to a certain young woman.
What? Why, dash it, he was 100 last birthday.
Your father is a man of about my own age. I should describe him as being in the prime of life.
Exactly.
I often say that life begins at 60.
So do I, frequently.
That, at any rate, was how Emsworth felt. The fever of spring was coursing through his veins. He conceived a deep attachment for this girl and persuaded me to bring her here as my daughter.
What? You mean that my brother is infatuated with that child?
It was his dearest wish to make her his bride.
What?
And he asked me, as an old friend, to help him. He anticipated that there would be opposition to the match, and his rather ingenious scheme was that I should come to Blandings Castle posing as the Sir Roderick Glossop who was expected and should bring the girl with me as my daughter. His idea, shrewd, however one may deplore it, was that you, Lady Constance, would find yourself so attracted by the girl's personality that the task of revealing the truth to you would become a simple one. He relied on her, I quote his expression, to fascinate you.
Oh, did he?
Who is this frightful girl?
She is the daughter of a retired bookie.
My God!
Yes. Well, Emsworth came to me and proposed this scheme, and you can picture my dismay as I listened. Argument, I could see, would have been useless. The man was obsessed.
Have you ever thought of writing fairy stories?
No, I can't say I have.
Never mind all that, dash it. Get on, get on, get on.
So, I did not attempt argument. I agreed to his proposal. And shall I tell you why?
Yes, do.
Because a sudden thought had struck me. Was it not possible, I asked myself, that if Emsworth were to see this girl at Blandings Castle, with the portraits of his ancestors gazing down at her...
I see what you're getting at. You thought it might cause him to take another look at the frightful little squirt and realize he was making an ass of himself.
Exactly. And that is just what happened. The scales fell from his eyes. This evening he told her it could never be, and she has left for London.
Then dash it. Everything's all right.
Thank heaven.
I'm afraid you are both overlooking something. There are such things as breach of promise cases.
What?
Eh?
I fear so. He tells me the girl went off muttering threats.
Then what's to be done?
Lady Constance, you must make a financial settlement with her.
Buy her off? That's the way to handle it. You can always buy these females off. I recollect when I was at Oxford. However, that is neither here nor there. The point is how much?
Well... £300 would seem a fortune to her. In fact, I think I might be able to settle with her for 250.
Oh, that was the sum my potty nephew was asking me for this afternoon.
Fancy. Well then, Lady Constance, if you will give me £300, to be on the safe side, I will run up to London tomorrow morning and see what I can do.
I will write you a cheque.
No, don't do that. Roll the money about in front of her in solid cash. I remember that time at Oxford. No, I happen, strangely enough, to have the exact sum in this very room.
Why, so you have. We were talking about it not long ago, weren't we?
Here you are. Take it. See what you can do.
And if more is required...
Thank you. This should be ample. But there is one other thing. This unfortunate infatuation of Emsworth's must never be allowed to come out.
Well, dash it, of course not. Emsworth's potty is a march hare, but naturally we don't want the world to know it.
We should be the laughing stock of the county.
Exactly. But there is one other danger. It is possible, Valerie, my dear, that you have been thinking of telling your aunt on her return from the south of France that you met me here.
It is just possible.
You mustn't do it, my dear. It would be fatal. If she discovered that I had disobeyed her instructions, I should be compelled, in order to put things right for myself, to tell her the whole story. And, Lady Constance, my dear wife has just one fault. She's a gossip. In a week, the story would be all over England.
Miss Twistleton, you are not to breathe a word to Lady Ickenham of having met Lord Ickenham here.
Well, I... Oh, very well.
Thank you, my dear. My favourite niece. Well, if you'll excuse me,
Pongo, are you among us?
Ready, Uncle Fred.
Well, let it be known, I'm now in a position not only to solve the tangled affairs of Polly Pot.
Pot? What?
Pot?
What?
What?
But also to spend nearly 3 weeks in the metropolis with money in my pocket, moreover, to disperse on any little treat that might suggest itself. Eh, Pongo?
Yes, Uncle Fred.
Splendid. What a pleasure to be able to scatter sweetness and light, especially in London, in the springtime, when, it has to be said, I'm always at my best.
Ha! By on bonny banks and by on bonny braes, where the sun shines bright on Loch Lomond, where me and my true love spent many happy days, on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond. For ye'll take the high road, and I'll take the low road, and I'll be in Scotland before ye.
But trouble it is there, and many hearts are sere on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond.
In the final part of Uncle Fred in the Springtime by P.G. Wodehouse, Uncle Fred was played by Alfred Molina, Lady Constance by Patricia Hodge, the Duke of Dunstable, Christopher Neame, Ricky Gilpin, Rufus Sewell, and Rupert Baxter by Jared Harris. Mustard Pot was played by Julian Holloway, Horace Davenport, Lloyd Owen, Lord Bosom, Simon Templeman, Pongo Twistleton, Matthew Wolfe. Polly Pot was played by Sophie Winkleman, and Valerie by Maura Quirk. Martin Jarvis played the Earl of Emsworth, Darren Richardson was the footman, the singing gardener, Mark Holden, and Kenneth Danziger played Beach the butler. Ian Ogilvie was the voice of P.G. Wodehouse. Uncle Fred in the Springtime was dramatised by Archie Scottney, directed by Martin Jarvis, and is a Jarvis and Ayres production for BBC Radio 4.
And you can hear that episode again on Saturday evening at 9 o'clock. Next Sunday, we begin a new classic serial, a portrait of the jazz age in all of its decadence and excess, F. Scott Fitzgerald's seminal novel, The Great Gatsby. Coming next today, Mariella Frostrup talks to comedian Russell Cain, who looks at the nature of comedy in his first novel, The Humorist. That's in Open Book in a couple of minutes.
How are English classics such as P.G. Wodehouse faring in India against emerging homegrown authors?
What are anchovy sandwiches and what's blancmange? These kind of things that was totally alien to me as an Indian child.
BBC Radio 4 reports on the changing reading habits of India's growing middle class.
I've always believed that being a writer in India, you should write for India, be in India, and the people will read. You don't need a Western stamp of approval. That was a little artificial anyway.
Move Over Wodehouse, next Thursday morning at 11:30.